Boston is surrounded on all sides with roadblocks and armed guards. In a month, New York will also bristle with security to prepare for the Republican convention. But neither city can be fully prepared for the level of old-fashioned partisan political anger roiling beneath the balloons and the placards. It is the season of liberals getting madder at conservatives and conservatives getting madder at liberals for being mad at them. Political ire is as American as amber waves of grain. Reporter Alice Furlow says the founding fathers went at each other with hammer and tongs, and that's no mere metaphor.
Political sound and fury really took off in the 1790s, the last days of Washington's presidency. Newspapers were full of insulting anonymous articles, some of the nastiest written by that great statesman Alexander Hamilton. Mobs often filled the streets, and people threw stones at politicians and burned them in effigy. It was all part of our brand new party system, when Americans who'd agreed about fighting the British now felt free to disagree about everything else. The Harvard historian, Professor Jill Lepore, feels that this acceptance of political dissent was the great gift of the early days of this country.
That's what the 1790s are about in our nation's history. It's about the Federalists in power coming to realize that the Republicans, led by Thomas Jefferson, do indeed have a right to protest the existing government in whatever terms they choose to do so, and that that doesn't imply that they're not loyal to that government or to the Constitution. And that's the development of the political party system that emerges in the 1790s, and particularly with the election of 1800. And it's attended with an enormous amount of vitriolic, splenetic, crazy, over-the-top newspaper writing in particular.
And the graffiti was pretty vitriolic in the 1790s. A famous example was painted on what must have been a large wall in Boston. It said, "Damn John Jay! Damn everyone who won't damn John Jay. Damn everyone who won't put lights in his windows and sit up all night damning John Jay." The writer was probably a pro-French Revolution anti-federalist, mindful of our debt owed to France for the American Revolution. He or she was damning John Jay for negotiating a treaty favorable to the English who were at war with France. Before Jay even got the treaty back here, pro-French Americans were burning him in effigy and guillotining him in effigy. Alexander Hamilton was stoned for defending the Jay Treaty. There was violence in Congress that same year, 1796. Professor Lepore told me about a dust-up between two congressmen, Matthew Lyon of Vermont and Roger Griswold of Connecticut, about President John Adams.
And one day, on the floor of the House of Representatives, Roger Griswold from Connecticut gets furious because Lyon says about Adams that President Adams has an unquenchable thirst for ridiculous pomp. And Griswold gets upset at him and starts ridiculing and berating Lyon. Lyon spits in his face. Griswold takes his cane, whacks Lyon on the head. Lyon rushes to the fireplace in the house, grabs the fire tongs, and the two of them just go at it with the fire tongs and the cane and the fire tongs and the cane. And it's just obviously not the finest moment in our nation's history.
I don't know. Are there still fire tongs in the House of Representatives? What's happened to ordinary American fed-upness? I don't recommend going as far as Vice President Aaron Burr, who got so mad at Alexander Hamilton that he killed him in a duel. Both those guys could have used some anger management therapy, not available in 1804. But the person who spontaneously painted that long diatribe on the Boston Wall, damning John Jay, in a public act for all the world to see, must have felt a satisfaction you can't get today by typing your rage into a chat room on the internet, or joining a carefully managed demonstration like the Million Moms March, or writing a letter to a newspaper. Recently, I did read an angry letter to the New York Times lambasting the White House for the Iraq War and its secrecy. The writer was John Hugh Rubin, and I called him up. He's the director of the homeless shelter in White Plains, New York.
And I work with people trying to get them to deal more appropriately with anger and looking at the root causes of it as opposed to going there.
But in today's political climate, Mr. Rubin feels the only way to be heard is to get angry. Before the Iraq invasion, he went to an anti-war protest meeting.
It was a silent candlelight vigil up in Bedford Hills. And while it was a beautiful experience, there was the sense that, you know, nobody's listening.
Here's the final paragraph of that letter Mr. Rubin wrote to the New York Times.
We live in a democracy. We're entitled to know the truth and to react to it with heartfelt emotion.
Maybe a little heartfelt 1790s-style political anger would be good therapy these days. I can just imagine citizens of the left and the right out on the streets shouting their versions of the Jay Treaty graffiti. Damn bleep bleep. Damn everyone who won't damn bleep bleep. Damn everybody who won't put lights in his windows and sit up all night damning bleep bleep. For NPR News, I'm Alice Furlow, getting angrier every day on Cape Cod.
Oh, but bless Allie. This month, Alice Furlow received the Gracie Allen Award from the American Women in Radio and Television for her radio documentary, Rediscovering the 50s.